prices, but I don't have a car and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me. I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4 and the condom that's still in there that is probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun. Living in the city where I'm working like a walrus, but man, I don't need your money, man, I'm gonna be an artist. And I'm feeling like I wanna do whatever I feel inside. I put it all on paper and I'll hope that people buy it. And my only minor worry is how to pay the rent, but that won't even matter when I lose my apartment. And I'll really have no worries, I'll be just like a cassette.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening, you're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Portland. Before we start our show, I want to remind you that today's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Transpositive and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you. Okay, great. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight is our annual sex, love, and dating show. This is a space where we affirmatively uphold the dignity and the normativity of transgender love, sex, and dating. And we allow trans folks to talk about sex, love, and dating from their perspective, their authentic perspective. And we also have really frank and open conversations about sex and sexuality. So my name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns. If we could go around and if you could introduce yourself, those of us who are in the room, and tell us a little bit about yourself, why you're here, and also if you could give us your pronouns. Let's start to my left with Deidre.
Hello, my name is Deidre. My pronouns are she, her. I'm here because when I read the description on Facebook, you know, you want to do interviews, I was like, ooh, this is something I'm interested to talk about, you know, dating while transgender and sex and love.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Nicolette?
I'm Nicolette. I use AM or they, them pronouns, and I'm here because I'm one of the co-hosts, and I'm just happy to talk about my experiences with sex, love, and dating as a non-binary person.
Thank you. And Sheila?
Hi, I'm Sheila, and I go by she, her, and I'm an author and done most of my work on transgender rights and also on a variety of other topics that have nothing to do with transgender, which kind of shows that we can talk about things besides just our own orientation. But at the same time, the book that I wrote was designed to try to get to be short essays that were pithy and that would kind of try to get postage stamp views of various aspects of our experience. So I'm happy to be here tonight to talk about that and other things.
Thank you. And Angela.
Hi, I'm Dr. Angela Town, and I use she, her, or they pronouns. I'm a sexologist. I'm a feminist sexologist, which means to me that I'm here hopefully to have something to share and hopefully to learn something as well. So I'm here to teach, I'm here to learn. And so it's a particular interest of mine. Recently, I guess I'm in my second year now of a grant working with trans masculine people about sexuality, masturbation. Can I say that on the air?
Oh yeah, totally. Masturbation.
Masturbation, everyone. Fantasies, communication, relationships that people are sharing around gender confirmation. So yeah, thank you for inviting me to be here.
Thank you. Although interesting, I was listening to a story earlier today, and I discovered that in 1913, it was actually considered a capital offense to have oral sex with a woman. So, you know, in 1913, maybe you couldn't have said masturbation. I don't know. Oh, in the state of Georgia. Sorry.
In Georgia.
Yeah, which is very strange. So anyway, Nicolette, where should we start? This is our sixth year doing this. This is crazy. Can you believe we're still doing this?
Yeah, no, I remember our first show, I think, like that was like this.
Buck Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, and we've had, I think what was last year, didn't we have somebody from the show Poly Weekly come on? And they talked about... Yeah, poly relationships. We've had folks coming on to talk about relationship anarchy. I think, didn't we also? Oh, yeah, we did one too with some sex educators from Shebop one year. So.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I think that was one of our first years.
Yeah, yeah. So where should we start? Who wants to start? I mean, I can kind of get things going unless anybody's just like really ready to just start off right away. Let's start. I'll tell you what. Let's start with Angela. I think we're going to come back to you a lot this show, Angela, because you are a sexologist. Mm. And, you know, I know from having known you for many years that you're very welcoming. Yes, yes, you're super welcoming to the trans community and to the queer community generally. So let's start. Let's start with you, Angela. Let's, you know, when people want to know about sex and when they want to know about, sexuality, they don't necessarily think of transgender bodies, but transgender bodies are just as normal as cisgender bodies. They're just, I mean, we have many different kinds of bodies. So let's start with like a really broad picture. Can you talk about like what's normative, like within sexuality? Like what is the normative kind of experiences? I mean,
well,
can
I just go on a rant a little bit?
Please, please, please.
What's normative really needs to, we need to call that into question and really look at that. So, I don't know if you're all familiar with the sexual script theory, Simon and Gagnon's sexual script theory done in 1973. I will assume that not everyone knows the theory, but it's this idea that in order to understand that there's something sexual that's happening, there is almost a script that occurs in the culture, and we absorb this, we internalize this script. And it's cisgender, it's heterosexual. And really quickly, the script goes, first there's kissing, then there's kissing with tongue, then somebody feels someone's breasts, then somebody feels somebody's genitals, maybe there's a branch to oral sex, and most often there's penile vaginal intercourse, or PVI. That's the script. that gets ad nauseum repeated in movies and porn, a lot of porn, you know, TV shows everywhere. There's this assumption that this is when sex happens and the door closes, that that is what goes on behind that door. And it's an issue. It's an issue because people don't talk, people make assumptions. So that script is implicated in things like sexual assault, right? The unwanted sexual contact, because there's this assumption that once this kiss happens, this is what the bodies look like. These are the body parts that people have. This is what everybody wants. We're all on the same page and nobody needs to talk about anything. So that's really what's normative. And it's an issue for every, I believe we all need to do the work of resisting that script, in the sense that we can't be making those assumptions. Those assumptions are not working anymore. And they're certainly not good for everyone to have an orgasm either, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I thought what was normative was just to have an orgasm. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways of having sex. There's so many ways of experiencing sensuality. So thank you so much for, like, you know, giving us a good starting block to kind of push off of. We're going to push away from that as quickly as we can. Deidre, can we start with you? Because I'm just so honored that you joined us today. You know, you're a new guest and, you know, welcome to the show. You're a trans woman. Can you tell us or talk to us about some of your experiences with dating as a trans woman? How's that work for you?
For me, dating as a trans woman, well, my confidence is, I'm trying to build my confidence back up, because it was hard for me at first because so many people were like, well, I really don't want to date a trans woman. You know, they prefer to date someone that's cis. So, and when I was starting out dating, especially on online dating, you know, I always have to disclose, hey, at the time, you know, just to let you know, I am pre-op. So if that's an issue for you, let's just cut our losses right now. You know, some don't care and some be like, okay, well, see you later. Or they don't bother responding back ever again. But now I'm post-op, I still have that same treatment, you know, like, well, you are transitioning, you know, but then there's, you know, that wants to date me, which is nice. And they just talk to me like a human being. But I'm still afraid, you know, there's going to be someone that fetishizes a chaser. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's, Angela, I'd like to go back to you for just a minute and talk about that. Can you talk, are you familiar with the phenomena of trans women, like pre-op trans women being treated as fetish objects?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Let's talk, first of all, what is a fetish? And why is that a thing in, like, certain, in certain communities? Are you aware of that?
Yeah, so the, you know, the technical definition of a fetish, which would be in the DSM-4, 5, where are we on? The DSM-5, I think, right now, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's been in the DSM for quite some time. And what it, a fetish is, it's an object, usually could be a body part, that somebody has to have with them as their focus in order to engage in sexual response to orgasm, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. In it, what you're talking about in terms of you know, fetishizing an entire person, the implication is it's really a kind of objectification. It's a kind of dehumanization, where the person is no longer has a subjectivity in the fetishist mind. They're not interested in the humanity of this person. That person is there to serve as whatever sex object they desire them to be. It's really about not interacting with somebody as a human, right? I'm not concerned about what you want, what you desire. It's about what I desire. And if you don't serve me in that way, there could be some kind of aggressiveness sometimes associated with that, some kind of rejection associated with that. So it's taking the term fetish and it's broadening it, really, if we use it the way that you were using it. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, it's pretty common, like I mean, when I heard Deidre tell her story, like, to me, that sounds like really normal. I mean, I'm really used to hearing those kind of stories within the trans women's community, basically, where, like, if you're a pre-op trans woman, and just for folks who are listening to the radio, just so we can get our terminology straight, when you say that you're a pre-op trans woman, what that usually means, and I'm not asking Deidre what it means for you, but what it usually means is, it usually means somebody who has not had genital confirming surgery, which is, for trans women, it's usually having a vaginoplasty, which means taking, like, usually the way it's done is, do you take part of a lot of the tissue from the penis and it's turned into a vagina, and it's really amazing. I mean, it's an incredible thing. I just think it's so beautiful. And so what pre-op usually means is, it usually means someone who's not had that surgery yet. So they might have breasts, you know, they might have had facial reconstructive surgery. Usually they're on hormones. Mm-hmm. Usually they're totally passing as a woman. But they might still have, you know, a penis. And so within the trans women's community, like, we experience men who are specifically attracted to that kind of a trans woman. And so that's the context in which we use the word fetish. So is that an appropriate way to use the word, Angela, according to your understanding as a sexologist, or is there a better word?
Can I would tweak that a little bit, mm-hmm. what you said a little bit. So being attracted to trans women is not, or trans men, is not necessarily equivalent to having a fetish. Because mm-hmm. People are attracted to people based on their gender. Right? If people are attracted to different types of gender, really a fetish is about the dehumanizing aspect. So if I'm a person and I find myself attracted to trans women, and I'm really interested in getting to know them, or that person, you know, that I happen to be attracted to, and I'm not dehumanizing them, I'm actually, you know, interested in being respectful and knowing who they are, that attraction is not a fetish. Does that make sense? It's not a fetishization. If somebody is just, you know, attracted to someone's gender, but is not dehumanizing them at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Could I also ask a question that I guess is somewhat related, but I'm trying not to get too far off topic. Is there a difference between a fetish and a kink?
Yeah, I mean, technically, yes. A fetish can be a kink, though. I would say a kink is more of an umbrella term. I would put fetishes in the traditional mm-hmm. definition of the word fetish. I would say that would be a kink. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Emma with Transpositive. We're just taking a little break. I just want to remind you that it is our winter drive right now, and our on-air goal is $15,000. It's really important to me to support KBOO, because KBOO is a source of non-corporate radio. It's a place where programmers who don't necessarily fit into the corporate model are able to find a voice. So if you can, please give to KBOO today. You can give by going to kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much. I'm your listening to KBO Community Radio. We're talking tonight with Deidre, Dr. Angela, Nicolette, and Sheila. This is our annual sex, love, and dating show, where we affirm trans, non-binary sex, love, and dating stories. So let's hear from a couple of our guests and co-hosts that we haven't heard much from so far today. Nicola, would you like to either ask the next question or talk about the show topic from your perspective, from whatever you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, sure. So my perspective has a lot of intersectionality within you know, my experience with dating, because, you know, there's the fact that I'm non-binary, the fact that I'm pansexual, the fact that I'm polyamorous, and I'm actually in a polycule right now that consists of mostly trans people. Obviously there's me, and then I'm engaged to a trans woman, and she and I are also dating a cis woman, and then those two are also dating a trans man who I myself am not dating. He's my metamor. So we're a mostly trans polycule, and it's actually kind of a cool concept. The girl we recently added to the polycule, I think, is the first cis woman any of us have dated in quite a while, or first cis person really that any of us have dated in years. I mean, that's been interesting in that, you know, for a while it was just us three trans people in this polycule, and we kind of all understood each other very well because we were all trans. And so the girl we recently added, you know, she's understanding, but she's still, you know, kind of learning about what being trans really means. And she's learning how to navigate a relationship with three trans people. So I was really hoping to have her on the show tonight, but unfortunately she's working. Because it would be great to hear from her experience as a cis person what it's like dating three trans people.
Oh, that would be a great show though. Maybe we could schedule a show with her.
Oh yeah, no, I'd love to have her on the show sometime. And I'm also trying to get my other partner on the show since she's trans, but she's shy. I don't know if
she'll... Yeah, she's shy.
Yeah.
She said hi once, I remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah, I and on top of that, you know, I also experience intersectionality with being a disabled person as well, I think. So, you know, I guess I've had a lot of difficulty in particular with dating cis people, with dating neurotypicals, with dating able-bodied people, because it's like they don't really understand me as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's why in a lot of ways I've kind of gravitated towards dating other trans people and dating other neurodivergent people and disabled people, because they're people that understand me. And even though I'm attracted to all genders, it almost feels like I kind of need to narrow my scope a little bit to people that I'm going to feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
That's interesting. Dr. Town, do you know, are there any studies or have you ever come across any bodies of research that kind of address the topic of trans people's preference when dating? If trans people prefer to date other trans people, or if they prefer to date within the larger cisgender community? Because I just know anecdotally, based on conversations I have with other trans people that and non-binary folks, that like Nicolette's story is very similar to other stories that I've heard.
Yeah, I know of no studies that address that topic. I know the study that I'm doing right now, what Nicolette said really would resonate. And people say, you know, I'm attracted to, you know, perhaps cis people, I'm attracted to trans people, but trans people understand my experience. I just have an easier time with dating other trans people. So it's certainly come up in my research, but a study specifically about that would be awesome. I would love to do that study.
Cool, thank you. And I do want to say, like, in the spectrum of people, it's also really important that we acknowledge that there's a category of people called asexual, and that asexual is just as valid of a sexual identity as any other kind of identity. And there's actually a whole movement of people who identify as asexual. They have support groups on Facebook. They have conversations with each other. Asexuality can be a whole bunch of things. It can be, actually, let's go back to Angela for a minute and have Angela tell us what asexuality is. Angela, do you know what asexuality is? Can you describe it in like better language than I could?
I think you did just great. But asexuality exists on a spectrum. Some people experience no desire. It's usually defined by an absence of desire for sexual contact. Some people, however, want romantic contact, right? Romantic interest. Some people want touch, but they don't want sexual contact, right? So there's all kinds of ways to be asexual. Yes, but it's mostly defined by an absence of desire for sex. And there's probably a better way to define asexuality that is not in terms of an absence of anything. There's probably a better way that we can come up with.
Yeah, we'll have to have, we've been wanting to do a show for a while on asexuality, and I think we need to do that to let asexual folks really kind of define themselves on the show. Sheila, we haven't gotten to you yet. Anyway, Sheila, let's go to you for a minute. What do you have to say on all this topic, if you can tie yourself away from the women's figure skating?
What I notice is this. There's the transgender dilemma has always been, where do we fit in? Because everybody wants to kind of fit into the culture that they come from. And the very normativity that we talked about opening the show is that we do have a template of expectations. You can't watch anything from a sitcom to a drama or anything, or even Shakespeare, without seeing portrayals that are grounded in the idea of love and marriage. And marriage has never quite seemed to be able to contain all of sexuality. If you simply said, well, what types of aspirations might be innate in your particular body programming and your own inner sense of who you feel you should look like? That's the whole essence of transsexual identity, is that there's a lot of cross-gender feelings. And the problems happen, and I'm very familiar, and I covered in my book the idea of people that are specifically attracted to transgender people because of that in-between status. And it doesn't mean that feeling is it doesn't necessarily mean that feeling is necessarily meant to be exploitive. If someone really did love you, you'd say, well, they're not just using me. But on the other hand, I know that a lot of people do get used specifically for that, and therefore many transgender people to survive gravitate into the sex trades, which tend to be dangerous and sometimes very exploitive. And after a while kind of blunts the idea that you can be approached as an individual person with a right to be loved as an individual instead of just a class. And I'd say that's when sex can be a little dangerous, is when not just on a moral standpoint, but just by even psychologists would probably say, when people are only secondary to some exterior thing that makes them valuable, whether it's because someone's a sugar daddy and can provide upkeep, or whether someone is just very, very attractive and can kind of trade on their sexuality, we like to think that a real meeting of souls would kind of say that's kind of external. It shouldn't really matter. We like to think that we want to have human beings communicating with each other out of their soul, and yet you're not really entitled to that role. And because it became over-sexualized, transsexual people never just emerged first as human beings. We were always reduced precisely to our sexuality. And you can even see that in the way they treat attractive trans girls as opposed to less attractive trans girls. And what goes on there is that if you're young and you're hot, you know, all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, yeah, otherwise, yeah, I could tell you're a guy or you're a dude, which is so insulting if people ever say that to other trans people. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because we are seeking acceptance and we are kind of merging at freeway speed off of an exit ramp that it helps to be pretty. And I studied under the drag queens who I thought were gorgeous. And so my whole way of being has been kind of colored by makeup and glamour, and I've liked it. And I've met other trans girls that say, you know, that's objectifying us. Just your, and I say, well, I'm not saying that you have to do it this way. I'm just saying that makes me feel good. And sometimes I also look at it that the question of validity as having a vagina plays a huge role in trans life. And in some ways, it got to be almost in the early days a kind of a competition, like the whole idea is I'm more trans than you. That itself is dehumanizing, because it says that you're localizing your identity in something that is not visible to the world and doesn't really help as a daily gender passport, because that's precisely the part of your body that you do not get to share with the world. And so sometimes I get frustrated with people saying, I've had my final surgery, so I should be accepted as a woman. And I say, well, I understand that. I understand that aspiration. How we locate what our communicative, there are gender differences out there. We're aware that we're a bipolar society, and we do have expectations of the genders. And whenever we go against that initial norm, there's bound to be some social flack. But if people feel that they have to get gender markers to prove something, then it's sort of like saying you're not really there until you're young and you're pretty and you're as close to the ideal in the other gender as possible. And I sometimes look at very sensitive, poetic type cisgender men who are not your average football player. They are not less men because they are sensitive and because they are not built in like for a Rambo movie. And similarly, I don't think that someone should ever really have to kind of prove that they've done enough interventions, and maybe that's where we're at with all these things. And that's the difference between kinky, it sounds pejorative, fetishes is more distant and academic, but what it really is that people think symbolically and things have language. Even love has a language to it. That's why people say honey or dear or sweetie, and they use the same word. They don't think up some new little word of endearment, because even those things are culturally built into us. So we live in as individuals, but we live as individuals in this wider spectrum of all meanings and how we use language and how we symbolize. And if we think that how we symbolize things is actually how we think. We think in terms of symbols.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Sheila. That was quite eloquent. I'd like to just say a couple of disclaimers, Sheila, if you don't mind, just for our audience. One is, like, I understand that, like, within the frame that you're accustomed to, it was really normal to use the word transsexual. And some people don't feel comfortable with the word transsexual. But that's also a word that's very normal for people of a certain generation. And so we never have censored you on that, because that's what your normal is, even though people don't really use that word so much. Also, I just want to like really make it clear, like some of the things that you were talking about in terms of like people being young and pretty, like we're talking about things from the perspective of the male gaze. And I'd like to actually...
Exactly.
There's like so many ways to go though with what you're saying. It's so, thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you. I'd like to go back to Deidre for a minute. Deidre, was there anything Sheila was saying that like kind of got you thinking about your own experiences?
When she said, when they said, when you're, if you're a trans woman, you're pretty, you know, people are going to flock more to you. And also if you're not so pretty, they just don't want to deal with you as often, and I've seen that too in my community, and that's really not good. You know, we should get to know the person, not based on their looks. And I just hate when people use the term passing, because to me that could be just insulting too. And also I've seen that, and you know, sometimes I do get that word. It's like, oh my goodness, am I passing? Especially when I go to the gym, it's like, ooh, I'm so afraid, like, yo, they're gonna say, well, try figuring me out, you know, like, oh, you're way too masculine looking, your voice sounds too masculine. And especially in the dating world too, it's like, okay, I'm also have that fear, oh my God, am I passing or not? And what are they gonna think? And as someone who wants to be an actor, yes, I also experienced that. But dating wise, you know, that could really take a hit on my confidence level. Am I passing or not? So I'm always asking myself, trying to make sure people do not question me or try to figure me out. They just want to get to know me. That's it.
Thank you. What about you, Nicolette? Do you have any reflections on what Deidre or Sheila just said?
Yeah, I really think this whole concept of passing and fitting into the, I guess, the normative for the male gaze is something I have to deal with too, even as a non-binary person, because there's really no way to pass as non-binary. I mean, I guess other than like if you look so androgynous that no one can even guess what gender you are, but that's not me, unfortunately. I look like a cis woman to people. And so I have to deal with people looking at me and making assumptions about me, especially with cis men. I find this problem a lot where they will assume certain things about me because I look like a woman to them. And I've had to explain to a lot of potential partners in the past, look, I'm not a woman, I am non-binary. And whatever you're expecting out of a relationship with a woman, you're not going to get that out of me because I'm not really feminine. I'm not really masculine. I'm somewhere in between. And you're going to get both aspects from me. So, yeah, I think this whole thing about passing really complicates the dating world for trans people.
Thank you. And Dr. Town, what are your thoughts on this conversation so far?
Well, I'm just listening. I guess... Well, something struck me. There's a concept called transnormativity, and I'm taking us back a little bit. Transnormativity is this idea that once somebody comes out as trans, there's an assumed pathway to what that means, and it's a it's a normative pathway, which involves hormonal or medical intervention. And there's some resistance to this transnormativity because it ends up being another form of oppression, right? Because not everybody wants to change. Some people are trans and don't want any kind of, to take any hormones or to change anything about their bodies necessarily. So I guess I've been thinking about that concept as people are talking, but I really want to know more about this experience of dating. Deidre, I don't know if you were talking about dating specifically, but this experience of, it sounds like fear around passing, passing as cisgender, or were you talking about going out on dates with people specifically?
More like both, passing both as cisgender and dates. I'm always afraid too, if I'm on a date with someone and just making sure no one's trying to, clock me or something. And so that's where my fear is, just afraid someone's gonna clock me. Because besides my date, it could be someone else.
Fear for your safety, or fear that suddenly the person will no longer be interested in who you are?
Both.
So, one issue, so earlier in our conversation tonight, we were talking, and Nicolette was talking about what it's like, dating mostly trans people and how that makes Nicolette, or, Nicolette's experience with that. And then Sheila was sort of talking about, things from her perspective. I'm wondering, Deidre, if you could talk about what it's like to when you're actually dating people, how do you have that conversation about are you out when you're with trans when you're with people that you're dating? Do you let them know ahead of time that you're trans, or is it something that comes up in the course of the date? I mean, how do you choose when or when not to disclose? Is that an issue for you?
I like to disclose early on, so this way I know if they're interested or not. And also on my Bumble account, I put down I'm a transgender woman, so this way they've been warned. And then that's the beginning of my profile. Then I'll go write down my introduction. Then I'll put down the end. Oh, one more time, I'm also a trans woman, so just in case, they don't read my profile, they contact me, I give them a warning. Hey, fair warning here, I'm a trans woman. And this, I meet most people from online, because I feel for me that's a lot more safer than just to meet someone on a blind date. And because when I'm online, I can talk to that person. and we can talk text messaging, video chat. So until I get to the point of like, okay, I feel safe around you, or if I don't, then I will just cut my losses with you.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going for you? Like, I mean, how is it going for you dating people online? Has it been mostly positive? Has it been mixed?
Mixed. Mm-hmm. I am currently dating someone from that I met on Bumble, and she's really great, and she knows that I'm transgender, and she came visit me while I was in hospital after my surgery.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, thank you. And it's been positive, but I'm also polyamorous too, so I gotta be, and I'm still, you know, looking around for dates, and yes, it can be positive, sometimes it can be negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because as someone's transitioning, I feel like they want me like a certain way, like in a box. Like, I like to exercise, and they might see that as too masculine for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
they'll just end up ghosting me, which is fine mm-hmm. with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally hear you. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Emma from Transpositive. We're just taking a little break in the show today to remind you that KBOO is a great radio station, and 80% of our funding comes from our members. We're 52 years old, and we're one of the oldest community radio stations in the country. KBOO is a real gem, and I hope that you will support KBOO right now during our winter drive. Our on-air goal is $15,000, and if you'd like to give to KBOO, just go to kboo.fm/give. We're community funded, so we need your help to get there. If you can, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
So where should we go with our conversation? We've covered a few things about dating. So, I mean, this is really interesting. One of the things that you're talking about, Deidre, which is really interesting, is online dating. And mm-hmm. I think that that's how a lot of trans folks like try to meet nowadays. I mean, there's different kinds of ways in which trans people meet mm-hmm. and in which they find each other, but online seems to be like one of the most common ways. And online is like really positive because it allows you a chance to filter and edit. Maybe we could talk about that a little bit. I mean, how is like, so your experience, you use Bumble mostly?
Yep.
Do you think that Bumble, I mean, I've heard a lot of good things about Bumble. Do you think that that's like the most trans friendly dating app out there?
I can only speak for myself, and I'm going to go with yes.
Mm-hmm. Are there like features that are in the technology that make it a little bit more useful for trans folks?
If you ask me, like, you know, I could put down I'm a trans woman. I post a lot of pictures and, you know, just talk to people. What's great about Bumble is as a trans woman, because the females have to make the first move to talk to the person, which is great for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure the answer is any.
No, yeah, I remember that about Bumble, that it's really kind of, yeah. Are you familiar with Bumble, Dr. Town?
I am, yeah.
You know, as a doctor of sexuality, I mean, I imagine that dating apps isn't necessarily like part of what you learn about the human body, but it must be something that you come across like in some of your research and your conversations. Mm-hmm. I mean, what role do dating apps play right now in dating?
I mean, yeah, they're key now. Yeah. Wow. What role? You know.
Right, let's say for queer people generally, because I want to talk about everyone, but
it's overwhelmingly how people meet now. Mm-hmm. You know, majority of people meet online. You know, there's certainly benefits and drawbacks. Like Deidre was saying, you can disclose things without without the risks involved if somebody is face to face, right? If somebody is face to face, that can be dangerous. Right. So, but also, it's really harder. There's this pretense of sex, right? Very often, especially on things like Grindr, right? On apps like Grindr. Right.
I'm surprised we haven't talked about Grindr yet.
And so this idea of, I don't know if I'm attracted to you. I've seen three pictures of you or whatever, six, you know, whatever it is. And I don't have a sense of you as a person. How am I swiping anything? Like, can we have a conversation before I decide? And that's taken off the table. And I think that's the major drawback is we don't get enough time, you know, to really get a sense of each other on a lot of the apps. But I don't know, others may have different experiences.
I don't know. Hey, Sheila, back in the day, Sheila, how did trans women meet, like before there were dating apps?
Well, first of all, and this is the advantage, is that I began transition at 34 and I'm 70 now. So this is a long, long time of watching, going from when there was nothing to now there's everything. But I think a good way to understand people from my generation, although I can't be like the classic person to describe it, but I can honestly say that there was, the gay community had an institutionalized way of dealing with cross-gender behavior, whereas the cisgender community essentially alienated and pushed transgender people off and just said, we don't know where you're going to go, but it's not going to be here. Whereas in the gay community, there was room for everybody. So even if you were transgender, you actually could make friends with drag queens and feel fairly accepted. And there was more of a gay presence in most cities, whereas a trans presence that was at least out was probably, you'd have to be in a fairly big town. And what I've noticed through the years is this increasing distancing that technology allows us to do with each other, where we can kind of, and some of it is necessary for our safety, but it's also just another, it's like catalog shopping, except it's people instead of items. And it's like instead of going into a store to try on a dress, you go to Amazon, look at the picture of the dress and order the dress and then hope it fits. It's like, that's kind of what I see going on with people. And I don't, as an older person, I kind of miss the idea that people could first get to know each other either in a work context or a shared interest context. And then out of that would come the dating, rather than people saying, well, when I first went into the thing, that dating was precisely my objective. And I think that there's more of a chance of people's residual humanity leaking through something where dating, and especially not sex, is not the thing that you're aiming for from the very beginning. And there's a parallel thing here that I call this sense of nominalism. And nominalism is the idea that if you can name something, you understand it. I think our society feels if we could just put the right label on it, automatically we'll be there. And one of the things that you learn in the law is that the only rights that really matter are the ones that you can enforce. People's innate sense of justice is nice, and it's nice to have an innate sense of justice, but if it can't be actually reduced to a cognizable legal claim, then it doesn't exist. And what happens, I think, is we've reached the stage where what we think is, if I can name something and if I can get the right indicia, the right in signature, the right number of people that will sign on at the bottom line to say, I'm recognizing you as this, then somehow we've arrived, forgetting that sometimes there's massive social resistance to precisely the thing that we're asking them to accept. And we say, but we named it. Don't you see? Why aren't we there? And they say, well, because we have a contra name for it, and it's pejorative, and we're going to hang on to our names, and you're going to hang on to your
names. Yeah, the right wing loves to do that. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Nicolette, within the poly community, like within the world of poly folks, non-binary folks, how do people hook up? How do they meet? Are they meeting on dating apps, just like Deidre was talking about, and Angela, or is there some other way that folks are meeting?
I mean, I do know a lot of people, poly people, who use dating apps and dating websites. Some people will also just go to polyamory meetups or other types of meetups in order to find partners. I mean, I met both my partners just kind of organically out in the world. Like, I met my fiance at school, and new girlfriend, she's also our roommate, and she actually, we met her through friends, and she started dating us after she moved in. So, you know, we haven't used dating apps and websites ourselves, but there's lots of different ways to meet people as a polyamorous person. And I do know a lot of people who do use, you know, technology, but I also know people who just kind of go out in the world and find people and just let them know, hey, I'm polyamorous, I'm looking for this type of relationship. And from there, you can just discuss with your potential partner what you're looking for and see if this relationship arrangement is right for you.
Thank you. So you're listening to the Transsex Love and Dating Show here on KBOO. We're coming up on the last 10 minutes or so of our show. This is a show we do every year around Valentine's Day. And you know, there's a couple of things I want to get in before we kind of go around to everybody for the last comments. One is that, you know, Valentine's Day is a super hyped up holiday, and it's not necessarily always a great holiday for trans folks. And there's no reason that you need to feel any particular way about the holiday. It's a holiday that was designed by a postcard company, and it doesn't have anything to do with your essential validity and your worth as a person. So we're not trying to really buy into that process. We're trying to have really frank and open conversations about love, sex, and dating. Deidre, are there any last stories that you'd like to share with us, or last thoughts as we kind of head into the last 10 minutes of our show?
I think my last thoughts would be is to have more dialogue about dating as a transgender person. And I remember a while ago, a friend of mine who's non-binary, they said, you know, I would love to create a workshop on how to have sex with a transgender person, or even someone that's non-binary. And creating that workshop is to say, you know, language to use and how to talk to them, touch them properly. And I wish there was more workshops on that. That's all my thoughts.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Dr. Town, let's talk about that for a minute if we have a chance. I wanted to ask you about that within the field of sex education and sexology. Is there training going on for academics and for sex therapists around having language that's really appropriate for transgender bodies? Like, you know, is there a way of talking about transgender bodies, like in terms of how trans bodies orgasm, how they have sex? I mean, can you talk about that for a minute?
Okay, barely anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a lot of training going on about, like safe zone training type training, where people learn certain vocabulary words, right? Glossary terms, maybe some background history if they're lucky. But people do not want to talk about sex. And people do not want to talk about genitals and what, you know, if somebody's using genitals at all in their sex life, which, you know, is a question. And so there is an absence of discussion about language, about communication, about ways to pleasure. It's not completely missing, but things like, taking estrogen and progesterone changes the, maybe not for everyone, but can certainly change the way that the genital skin feels. So if somebody has what we might call a penis and is taking estrogen and progesterone, the way that they might want to be touched can change over time, for example. And the what we would call a clitoris and what we would call a penis is really the same material. It comes from the same material. And things like that, and things like what language are people comfortable using, would be a really good place to start a conversation. But in answering your question, like, is there some kind of training, like normative training that's going on about, okay, how do we talk with our trans clients about who want to be sexual, about communication? It's so needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The show's like,
we definitely talk about it on the show. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely, I mean, we acknowledge, we affirm that, trans people are fully dignified and normal, and that we can have great orgasms. We have great sex. We're not afraid to talk about our bodies. And I love that idea of your workshop, Deidre, your friend. If they ever want to come on the show and talk about it, you know, that would be a great thing. Okay. And this would also be something great for our community just to do generally. I mean, we kind of have to do a DIY thing with approach to, you know, sexuality, because, I mean, as you heard from Dr. Town, it's not something that is like really institutionalized. It's not, mm-hmm. we're not there yet. But I mean, we as trans people, we're already there. We've been there for a long time.
Nice.
Nicolette, do you have any final thoughts?
I guess my only final thoughts would be every trans person is unique, and thus every trans person's experience with dating is also going to be unique, and everyone's going to experience it differently. So, like, don't take it like my experiences are the same experiences of every non-binary person in dating, you know, etc. This is just our personal experiences, and it's going to be different for everyone.
Thank you. In the meantime, I'm going to move on. So Dr. Town, are you still doing your study with trans men? How's that going for you?
Yeah, so we're in the second year of a grant. We got funding, which is wonderful, so we can actually pay our participants. And we really want to hear from, so Dr. Tushabe is another researcher on this. That's who this we is. It's Dr. Town and Dr. Tushabe right now. We really want to hear from trans masculine people who belong to communities who have been historically marginalized. So we're really looking for minoritized racial groups and racial identities, and we want to call those voices forward. And we need 10 more participants. Can I use this opportunity, Emma?
Yes, please.
Say? So if anybody is interested in finding out more information, you can email me at sexpositivestudy@yahoo.com. And it's sexpositivestudy spelled out with no spaces at yahoo.com. And find out more information and see if you qualify or someone you know qualifies. That would be wonderful. The research is about these missing topics, right? About fantasy, about masturbation, and about partnered sex, about relationships and how relationships evolve over time. So, yeah, I would thank you for giving me a chance to shout that out.
Great, thank you. So we've been joined tonight by Deidre, Sheila, Dr. Angela Town, and Nicolette, one of our co-hosts. People know about your book and how they can find your book.
My most recent book is with Blue Forge Press, and it's a book of short stories, and it is called Auguries of Desolation. And it's if you look up and on Amazon, it's also up there.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, so much for joining us tonight on Transpositive. Thanks so much, and have a good night.
Hi, this is Emma. Thanks so much for listening to our episode of Transpositive today. It is our winter drive, and we're trying to raise $15,000. KBOO is a radio station that really gives voice to folks who don't necessarily fit into normal corporate radio. And we're a radio station that really tries to open our doors to everyone. So if you really value KBOO, and if you value what you hear on KBOO every day, if you would please consider going to kboo.fm/give and click donate in the mobile app, or text KBOO to 44321. Lastly, you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks so much and have a great evening.
Proud to co-sponsor the return of Portland Folk Music Society concerts with artists who tour nationally. The five-concert series starts this month, Saturday, February 19th, with Robin and Linda Williams.
Gonna drink sweet honey whiskey.
Give me a good heavy load and a clear stretch of road, and I'll let that old bulldog run.
The Portland Folk Music Series has one show every month through June. The concerts will be at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele Street in Portland. For information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.